An outrageous 24 hours of coaching news has hit in the football universe at large. Oh, and by the way, we've got an absolutely electric slate of super wild card weekend games. One stat you need to know for when each team has the ball. Let's get into it. No more time. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, January 11th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Very quiet week in the NFL. Hell, the football universe in general. And joining me to do just that is Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Harmon. Got the kids back in school. Supposed to be our downtime. Fantasy season's over, but some wild coaching changes. And I'm fired up for the playoffs. I don't know about you, but I do some pools and do some fantasy drafts. And so it's a lot to go over today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I expect you to be weaving in plenty of that playoff content, pools, fantasy, whatever, as we talk about these games. And yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, so much has happened in the span of 24 hours, you know, with the coaching news. I mean, Pete Carroll out with Seattle, Nick Saban retiring at Alabama. You know, the Patriots and Bill Belichick woke up on here on Thursday morning at 7 a.m. on the East Coast, and that news is broken. It's like, well, that almost feels like, of course that was going to happen. That feels like nothing compared to the Saban and the Carroll news, which is crazy enough as it is. And oh, by the way, yeah, we have an electric slate of super wild card weekend playoff games. So yeah, man, it's a wild time in the NFL universe, again, in just football in general. So I don't know, Dalton, like Pete Carroll, you know, Mike Vrabel being out with Tennessee feels like it was a year ago, basically, at this point. What's your reaction to just some of these big coaching moves that have happened of late?
Yeah, surprised I didn't see Pete Carroll going. The crazy stats circulating about him is he once had a run of 98 straight games where the Seattle Seahawks had a lead or within one score in the fourth quarter. Sheil Kapadia tweeted that.
That's just insane.
98 games. And obviously Belichick. I mean, the writing had been on the wall, but I didn't believe it until I saw it. So, some big coaching names, Vrabel, some interesting names that aren't so household names as well, candidates. But it's always a wild time right now with coaches being let go. But this year seems in particular one of the wildest.
Yeah, just the big names. And I mean, even the Nick Saban retiring at Alabama, I think that probably shakes things up in the NFL. Like, who's to say some of these guys that are hot coordinators or whatever, or even, you know, potential head coaching candidates, like, wouldn't you think, like, go down to a big program like that that's always competitive? Like, I would definitely be thinking about it. I love how there's this narrative that, oh, yeah, no, people aren't going to want to follow Saban, or, you know, it's too big of a legacy. Oh, I mean, come on. These football coaches, they're wired differently, man. They all think they could probably they could do what Nick Saban did at Alabama. Every single one of these guys is a big, confident hothead type of stuff. So I think this shakes things up. So before we are going to do a big playoff preview. We have so many games to kind of talk through here, but I do want to play a little quick matchmaker here. There are currently 8 openings in the NFL, Dalton, which is like 25% of the damn league. It's just crazy the amount of coaching upheaval we are experiencing right now. By the way, there's a non-zero percent chance that if a, you know, team gets upset this weekend, they could make a head coach change. I mean, you know, there's smoke around Philadelphia with the way things have gone there. Certainly Dallas, everybody's got their eye on Mike McCarthy if they're to lose in the first round of the playoffs. So there's still some more potential shakeups that could happen. But here are the current jobs that are available right now that Bill Belichick, that domino has fallen. We've got Chargers, Commanders, Falcons, Raiders, Seahawks, Patriots, Titans, Panthers. That's almost formulated like a ranking of these jobs, by the way, in my opinion, although I think the Chargers are probably somewhere around 3, not first, in my personal opinion. But Dalton, I just want to know, off the top, anybody stand out as a potential easy match for one of these jobs here?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be a little biased because I would prefer to hire an offensive mind, a head coach. That's the route that I would go in my franchise. And I'm also going to be a little hypocritical because I'm going to criticize Slowick's pass rate and then recommend Ben Johnson on a team that ran the ball a lot on the Lions. But I think there are two different situations, and Johnson appears to be the bright new offensive mind that I'd go after first here. And Chargers, Commanders, and Falcons are all great spots. Herbert, let's get him an offensive mind. Staley was a defensive coordinator. Let's see what he can do healthy with a new coach. Commanders, I'm with you. That might be the number one spot because they have a top draft pick, a lot of draft picks, not just the new quarterback, and salary cap, I believe. So I think they're
in the NFL. A
tremendous spot. So you get him and I'll get Ben Johnson there. I'd be happy. And of course the Falcons. I mean, Bijan Robinson had a 52% opportunity share this year. Drake London is a superstar just waiting to be utilized correctly. So let's get him, Ben Johnson. I'd be happy with Ben Johnson in any of these top three specifically, because those situations scream, you know, offense is ready to take the next step. Raiders, keep Antonio Pierce. And then before I keep going, just one more throw at you. It'd be fun if Jim Harbaugh went to the Seahawks, because there was a huge rivalry with the Niners.
Yes.
It would be, and they're used to the college culture, whatever. I don't know, man. That would be a fun fit to then suddenly be rivals against the Niners when it was just the opposite his last NFL tenure.
I love that. That would be spicy. Me personally, I want to see Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers because I think it'd be a natural fit. Right. Like, I mean, you got Herbert, who I even think from a personality standpoint, Dalton, you know, Herbert's a quiet, like reserved kind of not a big boisterous personality. Let's just say Jim Harbaugh is the opposite. I think those two could kind of complement each other, and it would allow Jim Harbaugh to probably be the center of attention that he wants to be at a program. I also think the Chargers kind of need a star, right? They need they have a star in Justin Herbert on the field, but I think like from a out there guy, I think Jim Harbaugh would fit the bill there. I think he'd make a great, great candidate there. I'm glad that you brought up the Commanders, because I feel so strongly that this is the best job, because you know, they don't have Justin Herbert, but they have maybe a path to get at Justin Herbert. You know, if you're Ben Johnson and you like Drake May or you like Caleb Williams, you should be trying, which sucks, by the way. I do feel for him that he probably has to be formulating these opinions because he's so in demand, and they've already requested, I believe, to interview him. Both Lions head coach or defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, defensive coordinator there, has been requested by the Commanders. I would be trying to think, like, while I'm prepping for a big playoff game, what do I think about these college quarterbacks? Because if you like Drake May or you like Caleb Williams, like I said, you should be angling for this Commander's job. Most cap space in the NFL. They have a two second round picks and two third round picks in addition to the second overall pick. And you have guys there on the roster in Terry McLaurin and some of the guys like Jonathan Allen, Jerron Payne on defense to maybe help you set a culture there as well.
They're going after my Niners. They're going hard after Adam Peters for the GM. Mm-hmm. And then Wilkes could even become a coaching. I mean, he's doing interviews as well, defensive coordinator. So I hope Peters stays. But it sounds like the Commanders are making moves, making potentially smart moves. And I was just locked in on Caleb Williams as a generational talent and just a no-brainer number one pick. Not so much 1 year later. And he's also 1 year older than May. I did not realize he's a full year older. So do you have an opinion on one of those two? I guess the Commanders are going to have the other, probably not going to have to make that choice themselves either way. I think obviously they're still very, very good prospects, but I have pumped the brakes slightly on how much of a sure thing Caleb Williams is.
It's definitely not a sure thing. I think there are people, I know Nate Tice, who works for us, he likes Drake May a little bit better than Caleb Williams, and he has maintained that all year long. I think these guys are both really good prospects, and it's not like a Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson type situation, or Trevor Lawrence, even if you liked Justin Fields or Trey Lance better. I know those guys didn't end up working out, obviously, but I don't think it's a big drop off there. I think these guys are pretty close up at the top of the draft. I do like Drake May a little bit, just from what I mean, very early glimpses. I would be really excited. I'm trying to get Drake May to Washington to throw passes to Terry McLaurin. And yeah, I mean, if you're Ben Johnson, like, you have receiving talent there. They obviously did do great stuff in the run game. There's no question about that. But the route concepts and the spacing of that offense, I've said, are the best in the league, or at least top three in the league, in my opinion, in that offense. So I think he'd be a great fit there. I'm with you, by the way, Raiders. I think should just keep Antonio Pierce. Like, I think you should turn over every stone and, like, do a real coaching search. But man, you've got the most important players on that roster. Davante Adams, Max Crosby, like buying into Antonio Pierce. I think there is some credibility there. I think ownership would buy some, you know, goodwill with some of their best players that they want to keep around, that they want to keep engaged. I think they should keep him. But I do think if you're the Raiders, you should get a good sense of like Antonio Pierce. What's your plan in terms of offensive coordinator? Are we sticking with guys that we've had in the building? The guy who called plays for them, Bo Hardigree, he did a pretty decent job at times. They have Scott Turner on the staff, who I'm high on as a passing game coordinator. I think the Raiders stand pat. I'm curious, Falcons, what do you think of like a Frank Smith type from the Miami Dolphins? He's their offensive coordinator. People speak highly of him. Obviously, Mike McDaniel and those guys did a great job designing a run game this year. I think that would fit with Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. Plus, it's kind of a condensed passing attack, and I think that would actually fit these guys like Kyle Pitts, like Drake London pretty well too.
And the Raiders, by the way, just had an internal replacement not long ago, you know,
yes,
provide a winning culture. And then they went outside and tried to go elsewhere. So I feel like even with that happening, Pierce just makes so much sense here. I'm not really familiar. I couldn't tell you like Frank Smith's schemes. Right? I'm not familiar enough, but I do know if he's an offensive mind, let's get him over to Atlanta. I mean, it's Bijan Robinson was taken in the first round and he the top 10, and he was never given more than 23 touches in a game and just crazy. Was removed in all the red zone area. I know we are fantasy people. It looks like we're biased here, but Drake London, I mean, I wrote in my numbers do lie column and I said that he's a certified terrific route runner linking to you. We know it. We see it with our own eyes. He's one of the best receivers in football, and he ranked top 25 in, you know, the good things we want. And then bad and catchable target rate. So we need a quarterback, yes, there too, but we need a coach that gives the best players on his team the most opportunities.
And I love if you hire an offensive coach here, and it does kind of sound like maybe Arthur Blank is big game hunting. Like they've been linked to Belichick. They've been, yeah, you know, all that type of stuff. Yeah. But I do just, it strikes me as pretty similar. I think I might've mentioned this on the, who knows what we're saying at this point. Now it's weird. I can't keep track of what I'm saying even more so now that I'm not podcasting every day on this damn show, but I'm pretty sure I made the comparison to the Colts job last year where you have a defensive coordinator and Ryan Nielsen in-house that you should want to keep around, keep that continuity going. Just bring in an offensive coach like a Frank Smith, like the Colts did with Shane Steichen, and go to work there. So I like that. Let's go to Patriots. I feel like this just should be Mike Vrabel. Like, I mean, yeah, it should just be Mike Vrabel. I mean, it's Vrabel is a unique personality. My sense that I've gotten talking to people about this is that this is just this was a situation where Vrabel wants to be kind of at the center of the universe and in terms of like not necessarily calling all the shots, but like that I think Charles Robinson said it pretty well on their show that they want he wants the power to flow through the head coach. That's not what the Titans wanted. The Patriots are used to that already, so I feel like that's just an easy connection there. Obviously, the history. The guy was at the Ring of Honor ceremony saying "we," and you know, we got a game to play when he was getting inducted. So it just drop him in there, man.
That one seems like a natural fit. That's exactly where I was going to go. And then the Titans one's a little trickier, though. Who do you see replacing him in Tennessee?
Titans are tricky. I think they need so much help from a defensive perspective. I think it would be great to get, I mean, obviously you want, Amy Strunk Adams said she wants cooperation, collaboration, synergy, all of those words when talking about why they let go of Mike Vrabel. So it does maybe make sense to get someone from this same coaching tree, right? Like someone that's been in the 49ers building with Rand Carthon, the GM. So Bobby Slowick maybe makes sense. I personally think this, again, should be a defensive play caller here, in my opinion. So I'm thinking maybe Mike McDonald or Raheem Morris are probably my names here. I'll go with Raheem Morris. It seems like a building that could use some experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, McDonald's another name I did want to throw in here that he's done an impressive job this year and definitely deserving of these interviews. So we're left with Carolina.
Well, Seahawks, I think it's got to be Dan Quinn.
I think okay, you're going. Yeah, okay.
I think I know it's like a lot of people made this thought yesterday. My conspiracy theory is this is why Dan Quinn has been turning down jobs for years. Maybe he's had Seattle on the brain, right? Maybe there's been some sort of, I made this allusion on my other show that there's something going on here. I feel like if Pete Carroll's going to stay in the building, which I don't even know if that's 100% certain. Like, Pete sounds like a guy who still wants to be coaching, who this was not his decision, at least not entirely or originally his decision to move into this advisory role. But if he's going to stay in that building, like, I think you have to have somebody that has worked with Pete Carroll before. So Dan Quinn to Seattle just feels like a natural fit there.
Yeah, maybe it's my Kyle Shanahan bias, but Quinn seems like a very good great coordinators, maybe not the best head coach. But again, maybe that's my Shanahan bias there. But and absolutely, that could be a path there. So the Panthers, Scott Barrett tweet, they gave up Caleb Williams, DJ Moore, 2023 top 10 round one pick, 2022 round two pick, 2025 round two pick to draft Bryce Young instead of CJ Stroud. So that's not ideal. No. Second, I want to give you one of the craziest stats I've heard of the 2023 NFL season. The Carolina Panthers never held a lead during the fourth quarter. Both their wins came on buzzer field goals after time expired. That seems like a rough situation to step into, but their defense is sneaky good. Yes. I mean, all year long, they were the worst matchup for opposing quarterbacks. Some of that had to do with game script. Then they suddenly started locking down the running game at the end of the year. I mean, they didn't even have their healthy cornerbacks the first month of the year. So on one hand, you have this first overall pick. Maybe, you know, year two, he can develop in a defense infrastructure there. But on the other, this is, you know, the losingest team in the league, and their future draft picks are thinner, and they have Bryce Young problem.
They do have a lot of problems. They have a David Tepper problem. They haven't scored any points since Christmas problem. They have a lot of problems, the Carolina Panthers do, which is ultimately why I'm going to put Bill Belichick here with the Carolina Panthers.
Amazing.
Look, you're right to point out, by the way, that this defense has some legit dudes on it. J.C. Horn has not been able to stay healthy, but when he's been healthy, he's been a pretty good player. Brian Burns, they need to figure that contract situation out. Derek Brown is a baller. I mean, he had 100 tackles as an interior defensive lineman. That is so. I feel like there is some legit talent here that Belichick can get the defense on track, and like they need a full scale program rebuild. And I think obviously Belichick is the right candidate to do that. I do feel I feel like some of these offensive coaches, like Bobby Slowick, like Dave Canales, I think are like a year away from these jobs. I feel like they could benefit from another year calling plays. And Mike McDonald, man, I think he can kick it down the road a little bit too. He could be like the Ben Johnson of next season, where he's the most in demand guy and is just sort of able to pick his spots. Like, why not come back to this group that is so well set up there in Baltimore's defense? They have talent, which is ultimately like why I gave Raheem Morris the Titans job instead of Mike McDonald, because no shot to Mike McDonald. I think he's great. They have great players on that Ravens defense. The Rams were able to put together like a competent group with a lot of young players. And I think that's what Tennessee needs, like a defensive guy who's going to come in there and like cultivate and grow under the radar, younger, talented players. Whereas I think if Mike McDonald brings all of that, like I'm disguising coverages, I'm playing so many different looks on the back end to a young group, it might be a little overwhelming.
And it might be tougher for McDonald to get hired this year if and when the Ravens do a long, deep playoff run. But Belichick to the Panthers, love it. That would be entertaining if nothing else.
All right. So to recap, Jim Harbaugh to the Chargers, Ben Johnson to the Washington Commanders, Frank Smith to the Atlanta Falcons. I sneaky like that one. Antonio Pierce sticks with the Raiders. Dan Quinn goes back to Seattle to be the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Mike Vrabel goes back to New England to become the figurehead of the New England Patriots franchise. Raheem Morris gets another shot with the Tennessee Titans. And Bill Belichick becomes the sun, the moon, the earth, the water, the, you know, whatever. He becomes the entire universe, the czar of the Carolina Panthers, and hopefully can put David Tepper in his place.
I've heard Harbaugh absolutely loves Herbert, so there really is a possible connection there. LA market seems, you know, good for him. He wouldn't mind that, but so that would be an interesting one. I like your landing spots here. Get some of these offensive guys in places that'll help us in fantasy.
Yeah, man. Ben Johnson in Washington and Frank Smith in Atlanta. I think that would be pretty exciting. All right. With that, hey, cool. That was coaching. Big news. We got a lot of playoff games to talk about here, man. Dalton, this slate, super wild card weekend, as the NFL wants to call it, is going to be, I mean, I think a great slate of games here. What we're going to do on this show, it's a preview podcast. It's sort of a hybrid of our viewer's guide and our stat nerd Thursday shows during the regular season. Of course, these are the playoffs. All of these games are in the binge category, so we don't need to split them up into our cutesy little categories here. Let's just go in order of how they're going to happen, starting with Browns at Texans, Saturday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern on NBC. This is the Andy Dalton Invitational. Let's start what we're going to do here, Dalton. We're going to break down each side, each team when each offense has the ball. So let's start with when the Browns have the ball. Our stat for the Browns comes from Jordan Vanek of the 33rd team. Joe Flacco is averaging 12.2 yards per dropback off play action, which is absurd. And the Texans allow 8.9 yards per dropback off play action. That is the worst in the NFL. Last time that these two teams met, Amari Cooper had 265 yards and 177 of them came off play action.
Man, Amari Cooper leads the NFL in targets per game with Flacco. Graham Barfield tweet, 42 targets in just 13 quarters of work. He's missed last week with his heel injury, but I believe he returned to practice Thursday. So good news there. He claims he is playing. The Houston had been a pass funnel defense that had shut down the run until getting ran all over by the Colts in the last game. And they're dealing with a ton of injuries. Everyone on Houston's front four is banged up right now. So that is an issue. You could see some Jerome Ford, but yeah, you're using Cooper this week in DFS. You're drafting him in your playoff leagues. You get a couple games out of him. And David Njoku leads the NFL among all tight ends in first read target share in the red zone with Flacco. And he's just been a monster. And you like the setup here. I know one of the rare games this weekend, or one of the few games this weekend, where weather isn't a concern. You're indoors here. The Browns defense, by the way, is very different on the road. So I wouldn't be surprised if this turns into something of a shootout.
Yeah, the over-under is 44.5. I could see this going over that total in this game. We'll talk about the Texans offense here in a second, but sticking with the Browns, worth noting, as you mentioned, that, you know, David Njoku is fully locked in. We're going to get Amari Cooper in this game. Elijah Moore, I don't know why he played in week 18 coming off that terrifying concussion.
Terrifying is right. Yeah.
But he did play. So we assume he's fully locked in. He's not going to get a ton of volume. But he looked great in that Jets game before going down with that terrifying concussion. So like, he's a guy that if Cooper's bracketed up, or, you know, Derek Stingley, who's been pretty good this year, maybe if he's on that side of the field, whatever, they're not going to travel DBs, any of that stuff. But like, when he's on that side of the field.
Yeah, why does Ryan's not do that? I think he should travel those corners. Sorry, but I don't know why he doesn't.
Well, most coordinators at this point aren't doing it.
I don't get it, though. Maybe, yeah, I'm not. They probably know a little more than me, but I still don't understand.
I think it's couple things. One, a lot of teams playing, you know, more zone coverage, stuff like that. And then two, so, like, with how much motion is being deployed on the other end of offenses right now, that makes it even more difficult, because you really can't break your rules that much. Like, if one guy's going to go from one side of the field, like a full field pre-snap motion, it's one thing if, like, okay, he's traveling into the slot last second, something like that, maybe you could pick it up, but even that still makes it a little difficult. But like, if you're going from full one side of the field to the other, that actually makes it even harder to shadow your corners.
Is it possible? You can't play zone and have your elite corner shadow the other and do both? That's not
you can. Doable. It just makes it more difficult. And you might, again, defense all comes down to rules, and you just can't necessarily break your own rules over and over again to account for one player, especially if that player is not a static guy. Like, it's one thing if it's a perimeter X receiver and the guy's not going to move around pre-snap, but he's just going to be stuck at that one spot. I think it's still easier to take account of. And I mean, the great example of this was in the final game of the regular season. Jalen Ramsey shadowed, quote, not shadowed Diggs, but he covered him a lot. But then Joe Brady was able to get him away from him with a lot, like a season high, I think 43% pre-snap motion, which again, that where that's going to come into effect when we talk about that Bills Steelers game, because they do have a kind of a guy that shadows a little bit in Joey Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. But that's a good example of a way that you can kind of mitigate that, and it makes it difficult.
Well, I just note Stingley and Nelson appear to be legit, and Houston over the final 2 months was just a pass funnel. You know, they could stop the run, and they were allowing a ton of fantasy points through the air. So something, I don't know. I feel like that could come together nicely if they're in Will Anderson, you know, get healthy. He might not be 100% this weekend, but I mean, I kind of just expecting the Browns to win this game because they kind of had a, you know, semi bye last week, and they've just been so good with Flacco. But you know, this is a 2.5 point or 3 point spread depending on your book. And the Houston's been really, really good at home. I mean, really, really good at home. So this should be a fun one.
This should be a fun one. I just can't say enough good things about how D'Amico Ryans has had that defense playing on that side of the field. Even if they're not there yet, obviously, you like you said, they've allowed some production to the passing game, but it's still a unit that plays like in the style. You can just tell it's a 49er style of unit with D'Amico Ryans there. They're playing with a lot of energy. They're playing very aggressive football there. So I think that's going to come together, like you said, at some point, but maybe not this weekend. Let's talk about when the Texans have the ball. Our stat for when the Texans have the ball: the Browns play cover one at the highest rate in the NFL, 65.4%. Their man coverage rate is the fourth highest in the NFL. CJ Stroud, I'm not going to say struggles against man coverage, but he's certainly not been as productive against man coverage this year. 82.3 passer rating, 6.37 adjusted net yards per attempt versus zone coverage, 105.6 passer rating, 8.03 adjusted net yards per attempt. So, and he's really shredded up cover three, which is why that matchup against Indianapolis last weekend was so favorable for the Texans pass game. But I don't know. I think that, it's, I mean, when you see single high defenses, and we see that this year with Nico Collins, his yards per route run is crazy high. I think this is going to have to be a big Nico Collins, CJ Stroud game if the Texans are going to hang, because, you know, Noah Brown's banged up now. Obviously, Tank Dell's been gone for a long time. It has to be a pretty similar look to what we saw last week when Nico Collins went off, but this is a style of defense that has given this offense a little more problems.
Yeah, Stroud against man coverage, 38th in EPA per play. Browns run a ton of it. Also, CJ Stroud splits this year with pressure from a clean pocket, 9.2 YPA, pressured, 3 TDs, 6.0 YPA. Everyone performs worse under pressure, but that's a dramatic split. So schematically, this seems like not an ideal matchup for Stroud. And I keep complaining about the play calling. They're passed over expectation just cratered over the final month of the year. And last week, oh man, Stroud was out of control. Stroud's numbers, Leslie, let's look at this. You know, he threw for 264 yards, 2 touches, just 26 attempts. They were just constantly running first and 10 and often not being successful. Man, it's just constantly sitting in these second and longs without Tank Dell. And it's tough, but he's clearly a superstar in the making. And Nico Collins, I got to stand with the splits here, but at home this year, averaging more than 100 yards per game, and had 7 of his 8 touchdowns all at home, and his target rate, you know, through the roof with no Tank Dell. So even in a, you know, tougher matchup, he's a very intriguing DFS option. Him versus Tyreek Hill is an interesting matchup if you're drafting for the whole playoffs. I could even see going the Nico route, but yeah, and Singletary has become their complete workhorse, just 100%. And again, he might be looking at 20 plus touches here because that's what Houston wants to do.
Yeah, I get it. It's just like that is the foundation of this offense, and like what Bobby Slowick knows coming from San Francisco. They run the ball a lot on first and 10 too. But it's different when you have that offensive line and that running back and just the whole thing there. I do think that, like, that's kind of what I said during our coach's matchmaker thing. Like, I feel like Bobby Slowick needs another year on the job, like, in my opinion. And it would be, you can run the ball in first and 10. It's fine. It's just this team in particular, it's not great. Like, I would love to see, because I, you know, that the Cleveland Browns know these tendencies too. Like, you know, they've been studying up on that. I would like to see Bobby Slowick come out here with like a lot of condensed formations and like multiple tight, like, things that look like rush attempts, like rushing plays, and run a lot of play action. That would be great to see.
Yeah, it really would, man. I I'd love to see Stroud actually get to cook here, because, man, he just looks like such a superstar. And yeah, I'm glad that they made the playoffs. We get to see them, in the spotlight. And this should really be a fun game that could be higher scoring than many anticipate.
We didn't plan to do this, but let's just pick these games against the spread. What do you think? Browns -1.5, or Texans?
At MGM, we got 2.5 right now,
and
I'll be the square. I think the setup's better coming off last week and the coaching advantage. I don't think Texans are right already yet. And Flacco, I'm kind of buying, man. I'm just, whatever. They're just slinging it around there. Like, they're, to me, the Browns are, they have injuries, especially on the offensive line. But to me, this Browns team is more dangerous than if they had Deshaun Watson with the current version of Flacco. Maybe that's crazy, but I'm going with the Browns and their defense.
I mean, the way Kevin Stefanski calls plays, he agrees with you, buddy. So I'm also on Browns -2.5 here. The defensive matchups go their way. The offensive matchups, I think, go their way. Like, the fact that the Texans have been that bad against play action, and that CJ Stroud has, again, struggled a little bit more against these single high man coverage looks than zone coverage, cover three, stuff like that. It just feels like, I mean, the Browns defense just feels like they can be a unit that takes this game over. So I'm with you. It might be a little more high scoring, but I do think Cleveland takes this one.
One thing I just want to hammer home, literally all four of the members of the Houston defensive line are on the injury report. Will Anderson's they are, even if they play, judging off how they got, ran on by the Colts, I think they will not be close to 100%.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, next game up here, the Peacock Bowl, baby. Dolphins at Chiefs. Chiefs are 4-point home favorites. The over-under is 44.5. Got to talk about it, baby. The weather. Could be a historic weather game in this one. This one comes in from @AndySlater. The wind chill in Kansas City Saturday night is now expected to drop to -21 degrees. The National Weather Service says during the Dolphins and Chiefs game, not going to be as bad. The second half wind chill should be only -14 with a real temp of 4 degrees. Oh boy. That sounds awful. John Ewing notes that Miami Dolphins in cold weather games sub 40 degrees since 2017. I don't always love these like since 2017 things, because it's like, different players, different coaches, the whole deal. They're still 0-10. They're 0-9 straight up, in those games, 2-7 against the spread per Bet Labs. I also note too, for our when the Dolphins have the ball stat, Tyreek Hill the last 3 weeks, 2.79 yards per route run. That's still a lot, but it's much lower than his 4.05 on the season. He has a 5.1% drop rate, 1-3 in contested situations. I think these last 3 weeks are important, not just because there's been other injuries on the offense, but Tyreek Hill, this is since he returned from injury, and I do not think he is 100% healthy right now, and certainly a lot of players on the Dolphins are not 100% healthy right now.
Oh, they might be the most banged up team in the league. I mean, offensive line, their skill position players other than Tua, I mean, Mostert and Achan. Waddle won't be close to 100%. And then we haven't even discussed their defensive issues. This is such a tough setup for Miami. I think it does matter, this temperature thing. I mean, ever since they switched the sidelines, whatever, how they did that, it's so hot, where they play. It's just a dramatic difference here. And the Chiefs have, hey, listen, Kansas City has its issues, but this is still Patrick Mahomes with his best defense ever entering this tournament. So, I mean, they're effectively coming off a bye. We know Andy Reid's does there. It's a bad setup for Miami. I'll just go ahead and say this is my best bet. The spread's moved, though. It's growing 4.5. So, hopefully you got it in.
Right.
Hopefully you got it in earlier. But this setup here is just very, very tough for the Dolphins to travel in this weather.
It is tough. Raheem Mostert officially questionable. Jalen Waddle officially questionable for this game. I mean, I guess those guys probably play just because it's a playoff game. But man, I mean, they're so banged up on. We'll touch on the defensive stuff here in a second, but they're so rough from an offensive perspective too. And like I said, I don't think Tyreek Hill is fully healthy. The drops are kind of random, but I have heard some people say when you're not fully confident in your ability from like a health standpoint, like your ability to run and plant and cut, like it can mess with you mentally, and then the drops get into it there. I have heard people theorize that about wide receivers. So I don't know. I'm speculating, but maybe there's something to that.
And fantasy points over the last 5 weeks, schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed by wide receivers, the Chiefs are the lowest by like a wide margin. Like they're in their own category. They've been that tough against opposing wide receivers for whatever it's worth. I know Legarius Sneed is banged up, but we all could, you know, easily bench or not use Hill and DFS and watch an 80-yard touchdown right away in our face.
Of course.
But just realize, yeah, he's banged up, and this is the toughest matchup for opposing wide receivers in the league. But they move him around, obviously. He's going to be you'd have to pay up for him for a reason in DFS, but I could see pivoting to like a Nico Collins and saving.
7.8 yards per reception last time he played this Kansas City Chiefs defense, which is the lowest of his season, Tyreek Hill. So I do think it's like a bad schematic matchup, too. You know, you're able to... We don't need to do a full scale like Tua thing, but like if you can change the picture and throw a lot of pressure at him and throw things off, he's not the best guy in creation. And like that's Steve Spagnuolo's thing. Change the picture, playing some funky coverages and heating you up front. Like that is the Steve Spagnuolo playbook. That sounds like something that this offense would struggle against. But like you said, it's not their only problem, Miami. There's a lot of issues on the other side of the ball. So let's talk about when the Chiefs have the ball here. Patrick Mahomes, 6.1 YPA, 5-8 touchdown interception ratio when he is under pressure. When he's kept clean, it's 22-6 in terms of touchdown to interception. So that is a stark difference. But man, with the Dolphins are signing like Bruce Irvin off the street, Justin Houston off the street. I mean, they're going into like the deep veteran discount bin to try to get pass rushers right now because of all the injuries that they have. And it shows up. We talked a lot at different points on the show this year about the defense and how good it was since Jalen Ramsey returned. Well, weeks 8-15, that was true. First in EPA per play allowed, second in defensive success rate. But the last 3 weeks of the season, as they started to deal with injuries, and by the way, they started to play some tougher teams, you know, Buffalo, Baltimore, Dallas, week 16-18, 32nd in EPA per play allowed and 31st in success rate.
I like Isaiah Pacheco in these playoff pools, drafted him in my home league in the third round, I think, here. His Grant Barfield tweet, his usage in three starts without Jerick McKinnon. He's the number one fantasy back in half-point PPR, 23.1 points, because his route share just increases with no McKinnon. Last time we saw Pacheco, he had his highest snap share and route share before resting in week 18, and McKinnon remains on IR. And this is a cold, you know, crazy game, wind, night game that's going to be not conducive for passing. And for what it's worth, Travis Kelce doesn't have a great history against Vic Fangio defenses. So I don't know. I could see Pacheco and our guy Rice really emerging here in playoff pools because the Chiefs, I like them to win this game, and then they'll just be a live dog against the Bills. And I think the Chiefs again are a team to really not underrate entering the playoffs here with Mahomes having his best defense of his career, and Pacheco. These teams are healthy and effectively coming off a bye, so I like the Chiefs to play two or three games in the playoffs.
I'm with you. I think that. I don't know if they can win the Super Bowl. I think it's going to catch up with them, this offensive issue, at some point, but I like them to play a couple of games here. So we're both on Chiefs minus 4.5, I take it here.
Yep.
All right. Next game up. First game on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern. Steelers at Bills. The Bills are 10-point favorites. 36.5 point over under. So what does that imply? Not a lot of points for the old Pittsburgh Steelers here on that side of the ball. Notable, we've got some weather potentially coming in this game. Snow is possible near the stadium. Winds too, 20 to 35 miles an hour. Wind chill in the low teens, it's looking like right now, according to Patrick Hammer. That's going to be a tough one. Our stat, though, when the Steelers have the ball. Let's talk Steelers first. This one comes in from our buddy Jacob Gibbs. You know Jacob Gibbs, he's been on the show. The Bills use press coverage at the fourth highest rate. George Pickens, 2023 splits. No press coverage, 16% targets per route run rate, 1.48 yards per route run. When he faces press, that jumps up to 26% and 3.19 yards per route run. The only wide receivers to average more yards per route run against press coverage this year, Tyreek Hill, and then the two GOATs, Nico Collins, Brandon Ayuk. So that does look like a pretty good matchup for Mason Rudolph and George Pickens. And it makes sense with the way George Pickens plays. You see press coverage, you see more man coverage on the outside, you just throw it up to him.
That's absolutely interesting. I saw that tweet and I was, you know, trying to see if I were going to use Pickens in a DFS lineup this week. And it definitely would lean me toward him over Deontay Johnson. But that said, this is a team with a 13-point implied team total this weekend. Yeesh. Apparently, the winds could gust over 40 miles per hour, creating whiteout conditions. And Mason Rudolph, as much as I agree, he should be starting this game over a healthy Pickett. What's his average touchdown pass? Like 76 yards or something crazy, unsustainable. Yeah, crazy. So this game could get out of hand. The Bills are also, I talked about the schedule adjusted, allowing fantasy points to receivers. Bills are the fourth fewest over the last five games too. So they're a tough matchup there. So the schematically helpful for Pickens, but maybe they'll be forced to throw more. You know, they like to use their running backs a lot. Maybe they'll find themselves down double digits early, and maybe it will result in more targets. But when you're looking at a 13-point total and a 10-point dog, the Steelers are the obvious team to avoid in playoff pools.
Mason Rudolph, 10.08 yards per attempt the last 3 weeks of the season. That trails only Lamar Jackson.
Wow.
I mean, it's just wild where we're at with this Mason Rudolph thing, man. But he has legit been much better for the offense than any of these other guys. I mean, he is aggressive. He pushes the ball downfield, which is a good fit for all of these guys. I mean, it was Andy pointed this out on the Monday show. It was kind of crazy during that broadcast, with Week 18 broadcast, where they just kept like, George Pickens, George Pickens, George Pickens. They literally never threw him the ball. And it's like, oh, there's Deontay Johnson ripping off a 70-yard touchdown. Like, yeah, they got other players there in Pittsburgh. But this is a really good, I think, schematic matchup for George Pickens to have a nice game. That's going to have to be the focus of Buffalo's defense, which, by the way, Buffalo's defense has been like so much better of late than they were to start the year. And they do play, like, despite the fact they play a lot of press coverage, they play some like two high coverages with press coverage up front, which that could maybe offset some of the George Pickens stuff if they're looking to take that away.
And for what it's worth, the Bills' defense really took off after trading for Rasul Douglas, and he's questionable this week. He got injured last week, so that's another wrinkle here. But yeah, the props to the Steelers for, did they win 10 games and their point differential horrible, and Tomlin just getting it done again.
Mike Tomlin, man.
We called it. We called it before the year. They're going to break out, right? Wait, it kind of happened a little differently than we. They got there a little bit of a different way.
We just thought that Kenny Pickett was going to be we thought he was going to be as good as Mason Rudolph, and he's just not. You know, that's not on us.
No doubt. All right, I'm laying the wood here. Normally, I'm an underdog better throughout the regular season, but I'm going to be squarey here in the playoffs here starting. I think that the Steelers, this is a tough matchup. TJ Watt, they're 1-10 without Watt.
Yeah.
I could just see it getting ugly game script here. In this weather, Mason Rudolph having to play from behind. I don't know. I'm going to lay the wood.
I feel you. And let's talk about the Bills when they have the ball here real quick. You know, there's a lot of like, every smart person in the room is ready to tell you like, oh, look at some of the efficiency metrics. They're not that good with Joe Brady. Well, I mean, it depends on what you're looking at, because the Bills offense since week 14, when they got back from their bye, fourth in plays per drive, seventh in yards per drive. They've just struggled to put the ball in the paint. They're 14th in percentage of drives to end in a score. It's actually heavily skewed towards touchdowns, not field goals. So they haven't kicked a lot of field goals, which is actually bringing that number down a little bit here. But I still think this Bills offense, I mean, Khalil Shakir is a baller, dude. I love Khalil Shakir. I think he's going to be a really good player for this team long term. His emergence in week 18 when Gabe Davis went out, because I think Gabe Davis probably misses this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gabe Davis is a good blocker, and we know he brings some like downfield juice, but Shakir brings him a dimension. They have Dalton Kincaid, like Trent Sherfield can play a little bit. I think the Bills are fine, even if they don't have Gabe Davis in this game. And honestly, there were some missed opportunities by like James Cook last week, and of course the Josh Allen turnover stuff.
Yeah, Cook has dropped at least three sure touchdowns this season. That said, I really like his matchup here. You look at the last 5 weeks, schedule adjusted fantasy stats, and one of the teams most vulnerable to receiving backs have been the Steelers. Basically, only the Bears have been worse. So that's Cook's game. Diggs, what's up with Diggs? His snaps went back up in week 18, had a productive game. Everything looked, something's off with him. But now he's going to be shadowed by Joey Porter in a game with horrible weather. But Gabe Davis may miss it, and he's Diggs. So what are we making with Diggs' situation now?
I mean, Diggs looked great in week 18. I think he's looked fine this whole time. I think he's been dealing. I think it's an unreported injury was the reason that the snap count went down. And nothing confirms that more to me than Buffalo Bills like PR kind of cutting off when the whole thing with Tim Graham. I think I've talked about that on the show here. Like, that you don't want your head coach in a position where you're talking about, yeah, we're lessening his snaps, or he's asking off the field because he's dealing with an injury, and then like, oh, well, you're falsifying the injury report. You get a lot of that stuff happens here. Players just don't openly talk about their injury. You see your boy Kyle Pitts posted on Instagram that, oh yeah, you know, I had an MCL injury or a PCL injury in addition to the MCL. So like, players just don't talk. Rashad Bateman talking about in The Athletic I thought I was going to miss the entire season. Like, players don't talk about their injuries publicly, and they have a lot of reasons to not do that, and a lot of good reasons not to do that, by the way. Like, people get upset about it because, like, oh, betting in fantasy, it's called gambling, okay? That's the risk. It's part of the risk that you take, is you don't know all the information. I don't think we've known all the information with Diggs from an injury perspective. There was really good video out from NFL Films. I retweeted about, like, him telling Josh Allen, like, let's go put the dagger in him, you know, talking about this was a great play. Like, there's clearly no, like, personality thing going on right now. And, you know, he whispered to Allen, like, four more. Like, we got to get four to go win the Super Bowl. Like, I think he's fully locked in. And I think that motion stat that I read off with Next Gen Stats, that he was in motion on a season high, I think it was 43% of his plays last week. That's going to be critical to him getting away from Joey Porter Jr. We'll talk about prop bets at the end of the show. I might have one that I like on Stefon Diggs. So I'm with you. I'm on Bills minus 10 here as well. I hate to lay that many points in a playoff game, but it just does feel like to me, even though the Bills are weird and they can get dragged down to the mud here with the Steelers, I do think that's possible. The fact that TJ Watt's not out there is a big tilter for me.
Final thoughts on this game: is playoff Lenny gonna emerge? Ty Johnson banged up. Murray's fallen below the depth chart, and I mean, I would do not be surprised when and if Fournette steals a couple of short touchdowns from your James Cook. Just do not be shocked when that happens.
Where are my Leonard Fournette props? Like, there's none on BetMGM right now. I'm trying to lose some money betting on playoff Lenny this weekend. Come on, BetMGM. Let me make some bad decisions. Next game up here, Packers at Cowboys. Cowboys are 7.5-point home favorites, 50.5-point over under here. Let's talk when the Cowboys have the ball first. Packers defense has lined up in single high coverage on their fourth most snaps of any defense this year, 61%. They have allowed the fifth most production per drop back in single high. The only other teams that are around kind of 60% single high rate that allow that kind of production are the Eagles and the Bengals, who are two of the worst defenses in the NFL this year. This Packers defense is really bad, and it's a horrible matchup for the Cowboys passing game because Dak Prescott, oh, he just leads the NFL. If you throw out the hilarious Mason Rudolph stuff, guys that have started all year, let's put it that way, he leads the NFL in passer rating against single high coverage with 113.4, and he trails only your boy Brock Purdy in adjusted net yards per attempt against single high coverage.
Yeah, this is a good setup for Dallas, who's just so, so tough at home. Let's talk a little CeeDee Lamb. He had 101 catches, 1,366 yards from scrimmage, and 13 touchdowns over Dallas's final 11 games following the team's bye. I mean, that is 89.3 more fantasy points, half PPR fantasy points, than the next best receiver, Amon-Ra St. Brown, over that span. I mean, he's averaged more fantasy points over that span than McCaffrey averaged this season. So just pretty wild. And then you said it, this week is such a good matchup. The Packers are extremely vulnerable to the slot, allowing the second most fantasy points there that season. Lamb runs almost 60% of his routes there. They're just going to smash. Cowboys have the highest implied team point total this week, 29. They average more than 37 points per game at home this year. So Lamb is the number one DFS play this week. Tony Pollard, the guy converted 2 of 17 carries inside the 5 for touchdowns, 1 in week 1 and 1 in week 18. He did show more explosiveness over the second half of the year, and his role just remains so elite in this. And theoretically, they should have 2 home games to open up the playoffs. So you got to treat him as a valuable fantasy back, whether you're in a pool or DFS this week.
Producer Colin notes in the chat, CeeDee Lamb against Green Bay last year, 11 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns. On the season, CeeDee Lamb, 55 targets on slant routes, deep crosses, and shallow crosses. He was targeted on 54% of those routes when he ran those routes, according to Fantasy Points data. He was second in yards on those play behind only Amon-Ra St. Brown, which again makes a lot of sense considering that player's skill set there. He was a monster on those slant routes, 5.21 yards per route run, in terms of guys that had a lot of targets on those routes. It's the most. Him and St. Brown are kind of in their own category there. We'll talk about St. Brown a little bit later when we get to that game next. I mean, I think CeeDee Lamb is definitely set up to smash here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, all the such a high team point total, and the Cowboys are just dominating at home. I mean, no matter the opponent, but it just happens to be like one that looks too good to be true. And the Packers have an offense that could, you know, hang around. I mean, maybe this game script doesn't call for it. The Cowboys have been pretty much foot on the gas pedal, you know, the second half of games anyway. But Jordan Love, quietly the Packers' fourth best EPA per pass this season. How wild is that, finishing with that? So I could see this Packers team with the healthy Aaron Jones, you know, keeping it relatively close to where Lamb remains involved even in the second half here.
Yeah, let's talk about that Packers offense when they have the ball real quick, because I do think they're going to get shredded by Cowboys on the other side of the ball. But the Packers, according to Peter Schrager, the Packers have 15 players born in the years 2000 or 2001. I mean, Dalton, if that doesn't make you feel like an ancient mummy, I don't know what would. To contextualize just how young they are, the 2023 Packers are the youngest team to make the playoffs in a non-strike season since the 1982 Patriots. So that's crazy. That's why Matt LaFleur is a dog. And the Packers have scored on 51% of their drives since week 14. They're the only team over 50% in that span. Only one other team is over 50% for the season. Ironically, it's these Dallas Cowboys. So the total here, 50.5, is high. I think this game is going to be a pretty big shootout between these two teams.
Yeah, per PFF's John Owning, our podcast producer, got the name wrong. John's actually married to a close friend of mine's sister. Green Bay ranks dead last in PFF coverage grade versus seam routes this season, while Dak Prescott has been lighting up the seam with Jake Ferguson. Ferguson's among the leaders in all pass catchers this season in the red zone targets. So he has an argument to be the number one tight end off the board in playoff pools. Aaron Jones has been treated, when he's been healthy, and AJ Dillon missed last week, he was just treated like a total workhorse last week. But the question with him is, now is he banged up the following week? This should be a fun one indoors. And again, a potential here, because the Packers quietly susceptible against the run, and they've, their defense is, you look at their year long stats, say in fantasy, they really, you know, scored a million touchdowns. You know, they really, they're not like some totally shut down D. So I could see the Packers putting up points here. I love the Jaden Reed. How high are you going to draft him next year in fantasy, man? I mean, he just looks so impressive. Yeah. And they just are coming up with everyone, whether it be Wicks, Bo Melton. I mean, who cares if Watson misses all year and Dobbs is going to be like their fifth receiver next year? Musgrave and Kraft. Like, what a job finding these pass catchers by the Green Bay franchise.
I think Brian Gutekunst should probably be the executive of the year.
Youngest team in the league, right?
Yeah. Youngest team in the league. Youngest team to make the playoffs, like I said, since 1982 in a non-strike season, according to Peter Schrager. That's crazy. They've hit on all of these day two, day three receivers to varying degrees, right? They've hit on all of them. They're all good. it's crazy. Bo Melton, pick him up off the practice squad. He's good. Jordan Love is really, really good. And they just weathered the storm with the Aaron Rodgers stuff. They trade him. They probably would have gotten a first-round pick in return if he hadn't gotten hurt four snaps into the damn season. So I think Brian Gutekunst just like masterclass job, I think, this year, picking these players. Great stuff by him. And Matt LaFleur, obviously, great job coaching him up. Like, let's not forget, Packers could lose this game and they could be out of the playoffs, and it is what it is. Cowboys are a really good team, and they can certainly hang with them from an offense perspective. But if Packers get eliminated this weekend, let's just not forget, like, remember where we were with this team, like, week five, week six, when, like, guys are running the wrong routes, they're running into each other. Like, Matt LaFleur is clearly frustrated, but didn't want to, like, throw these young guys under the bus. And now, as you mentioned, Jordan Love, top five quarterback in EPA per play. They're one of the most electric offenses in the NFL. So Matt LaFleur deserves a lot of credit for coaching this group up.
He absolutely does. I still criticize him for his NFC Championship field goal a few years ago, but I've got to get past that. Props where it's due. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, for sure. This team went from hot start to the year, Love, oh, wow, this transition is going to be seamless, to, uh-oh, this is a big, big dramatic drop-off in quarterback play, to, boy, that future, they look as bright as, you know, any handful teams in the league right now.
All right, pick it. Who, against the spread, what do you
got? this is stay away for me, but I would try. There's just no ideal fit for a Wong teaser, but I'd love to tease the Cowboys down. I'm very confident they're going to win at home. But if I had to pick the 7.5, I would lay the wood one more time. It will be the last favorite I pick of the weekend. But I think the Packers, they've reached their potential of this year. And this is a tough, tough task. The Cowboys at home, they're just a different team, man. Averaging 38 points a game. I mean, it's just a different animal in Dallas.
I'll take Packers plus 7.5 just because I like the way they're playing right now. But I'm think the best bet here is the over. If you're doing sides and totals, I'd go over on this one. All right, let's move on to the next and final Sunday game here. Rams at Lions. Lions are 3-point home favorite. The over under here, another potential shootout, 51.5. Let's talk about when the Rams have the ball. No team, number one, has a better record the last eight games. They're 7-1 in the final eight games of the season. The Lions have allowed 409 yards in the deep middle of the field. That is the second most in the NFL. And I mean, that seems like a really bad matchup against the Stafford Los Angeles Rams with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and shoot, even DeMarcus Robinson popping up for some passes over the middle of the field. I just can't see a world where these pass catchers, like, it's definitely gonna be a tough matchup for Kyren Williams on the ground, but I don't see a world where Stafford and these pass catchers just don't rip through the Detroit Lions defense.
Easily the game I look most forward to this weekend. Stafford averaged 285 passing yards, 8.0 YPA, posted a 15-3 touchdown to interception ratio over his final six games, despite facing two top five defenses. Get this, Harmon. The 49ers led the NFL with 6.6 yards per play this season, okay? The Rams got 6.7 when they were healthy. So they had the most yards per play in the NFL with Stafford, Kyren Williams, Cooper Kupp, and Puka Nacua on the field. They may be underdogs this week. They have the third highest projected team total. How funny is that? They're underdogs with the third highest projected team total this week. It is a pass funnel Detroit defense. Using my same last 5 weeks schedule adjusted fantasy points, the Lions have allowed by far the fewest to running backs. Guess who's allowed the second fewest? The Rams. This should be a fun passing game indoors. The highest total of the week. A white hot Stafford fully healthy. It's too bad Laporta is probably going to miss this game. Sucks. And you know the Lions will try to establish it despite that. But man, this is going to be awesome. I mean, Kupp versus Nacua. I mean, I'm kind of leaning Nacua these days. You look at the overall stats, went on the field together, and they were pretty even this year. But Nacua just, do you have a preference this weekend? Or if you were to draft a Rams receiver for a playoff pool?
I think it's Puka right now. I mean, I think Cooper Kupp is still a really good player. I just feel like the baton has been passed there.
Yeah, this offense is just so, so dangerous when healthy. And this is the first matchup in NFL history between two quarterbacks in the playoffs facing their former teams. Should be a fun one, man. The Rams are obviously a live dog, but I'm sure everyone thinks as much now. It really sucks that Laporte is banged up. I don't like to overrate one injury, but that is going to affect the Lions this weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned the Rams defense, their ninth since week 13, their ninth in rushing success rate and rushing EPA allowed. So this is definitely, I don't see how it's not like an incredibly pass heavy game plan. I struggle with this one, man. I gather you're going to pick the Rams here plus 3.
Yeah, I like the Rams plus 3. I would be more surprised if the Lions win by margin than I would if the Rams won outright. So yeah, I will take the 3 here.
Yeah, I struggle with this one, man. The Sam Laporta injury is really throwing me off here, because I think if the Lions are fully healthy, I think they can hang and score on the Rams. This is a really young defense that's done really, you know, they've done good things, but they don't pressure the passer as much as you'd like. Aaron Donald obviously is still a beast, but they don't have necessarily like a bunch of dudes firing off front. Like they're not a great, great pressure team. They're not one of the elite pressure teams in the NFL. And Goff at home with that lack of pressure, I mean, he could tear this game up. And I mean, my God, does Jared Goff have all the motivation in the world to tear this game up? I mean, this might be one of the biggest revenge games of all time. Just can't say enough about how I think for Matthew Stafford, it's going to be like a mixed feelings kind of homecoming type of game. And I know I'm psychoanalyzing and I'm reading into this, but that's what we're supposed to do. But Goff has every motivation in the world to stick it to these Rams, and specifically Sean McVay on the other side, who dumped him so hard. And now he's ended up having some of the best years of his career here with the Lions.
Yeah, the Lions are another team that's very different at home, and they are going to be tough to beat. There's no question about it. They're coached well. I love their aggressiveness, although maybe not going for two from the 7 yard line.
We don't need to do that again.
A totally tilted Campbell there. But I was going to say the Rams have a shaky kicking situation, and I Googled it real quick as we were talking, and they have since re-signed Brett Maher.
He's back.
I didn't even realize that part. I missed that part in the last week. So I still have nightmares from him single-handedly costing me a Survivor pool entry this year. By the way, four people split the $9.3 million props to those four. Not the greatest gambler in the world, by the way. The one who didn't split lost with the Broncos to the Patriots. But Amon-Ra St. Brown averaged 105 yards at home this year. He's ready for the playoffs, dyed his hair blue, saw a big jump in target rate and yards per route run with Laporta off the field this year. So he's the number two DFS play of the week as far as I'm concerned. This is just going to be a fun game. High pace, and it's just going to be a ton of passing.
Can make an argument that he's the number one, honestly. This one, our stat for when the Lions have the ball, comes from our buddy Sal Vitri. Amon-Ra St. Brown finished second in catches this year. He takes on the Rams 31 ranked secondary this weekend. The Rams play zone coverage at a top 10 rate. That is important because Amon-Ra St. Brown averages 9 catches against zone heavy teams. Love that. I think this is going to be a huge Amon-Ra St. Brown game. They should just be able to like scheme him open into so many big wide windows. Again, I think Goff and St. Brown can take this game over. So you're going Rams. I think I'll go Lions -3. I feel like they can take this one down. Rams, I mean, they're dangerous though. This is the one I have the least confident in picking.
I'm
pretty confident like in my Browns pick. I'm pretty confident in the Chiefs pick. These last two games definitely give me more pause in this than the other ones.
As a Niners fan, I wouldn't love facing the Rams right away. That's a dangerous team.
You guys own the Rams, except that one time.
Yeah, except that one time in the NFC Championship game. I was there in LA. But it affects you. It's just if the Lions hold serve here, then the winner of the Monday night game would get the Niners. So it totally affects the scheduling timing because of this new format here. So that is as important as the opponent itself is just the timing of all these games. But this should be a fun one, man. If you had to pick one game to watch this weekend, I would make sure it's this one.
Well, let's talk about that Monday game, the final one in Super Wild Card weekend. Eagles -3 going to Tampa Bay to take on the Buccaneers, 43.5 point over under. Honestly, both of these teams are kind of limping into the playoffs here. The Bucs scored 9 points against the damn Panthers, and they lost to the Saints the week prior and struggled. Were they scoreless in the first half of that game? I believe that's correct. And obviously, the Eagles are just in total disarray at this point. Let's talk about when the Eagles have the ball first. Now, honestly, I don't even know what we're going to get. They're so banged up over there. It's kind of a mess. But this stat stood out to me preparing for this game. Jalen Hurts, third most dropbacks with 2+ blitzers this year, 55 dropbacks on such plays, 58.5 passer rating. That is the lowest of any full year starter this season. It's right below Sam Howell and right ahead of Bailey Zappi, that passer rating with multiple blitzers. The Bucs have the second most dropbacks with 2+ blitzers this year. Yikes, that does seem like a problem. Jalen Hurts has really struggled with these extra pass rushers because he just doesn't have a plan. Like he bails out of the pocket, he boots to the right, and that can really put a lot of stress on the offensive line and break down plays that should be able to thrive in structure.
Eagles second worst point differential in the playoffs. Everyone's banged up. Will AJ Brown play? I haven't seen the results of the MRI. Devonta Smith will be playing compromised. Last time we saw Hurts, he had a disfigured finger.
Yeah, I mean that looked horrible.
It looked horrible. It looked really bad. He that said, what do you have? 15 rushing touchdowns this year. Those 1 yard TDs are just so money for fantasy, and it feels like the Eagles could make a run once everyone writes them completely off. But this does feel like they are just, to say they're limping in the playoffs would be an understatement. And defensively, they're a train wreck, more of a train wreck than their secondary, than their offense. So for many reasons, losing Steichen, injuries, just good old-fashioned regression. They ran hot facing backup quarterbacks, easy schedule last year. This year, they suffered more injuries. You know, it's just they ran cold. So it happens. It's what's tough to keep going back and making deep runs into the playoffs here. They're going to need a big big performance from Jalen Hurts here, because the rest of this team, they can't run with Swift and he's banged up, and the defense is going to allow some points, presumably, although Baker Mayfield clearly playing banged up too with the shoulder and ribs. I had Tampa Bay in a couple survivor pools last week. You had to pick two teams the final weeks, and I watched that. And let me tell you, they're losing that football game if DJ Shark does not fumble into the end zone. And it turns they didn't produce a touchdown against the Panthers all game, and I think they would have lost if that drum huge change went from a touchdown to a touchback, and the game was close. So that this Bucs team is limping into the playoffs as well.
Big time limping into the playoffs, but I think they have a clear cut matchup advantage. If Baker Mayfield can get these dudes the ball, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin should go ham in this game. Eagles defense since week 13, 11th most yards per target allowed to outside receivers, the most yards per target allowed to slot receivers. I mean, how are Mike Evans and Chris Godwin not just going to posterize these DBs on the Eagles side of it? I mean, these older corners, they bet on these guys to repeat what they did last year, and they have not done that. And there's been injuries now. You know, Darius Slay's been banged up. So I don't know, man. This is a tough one. Just if the Bucs were coming in, like the Bucs week 13, 14, 15, those Bucs, I'd be like, yeah, they're going to beat this version of the Eagles. It's just the last 2 weeks we've seen of Tampa Bay with Baker Mayfield playing compromised does have me like pausing just a little bit. They're another team that is very insistent on first and second down runs, these early down runs with Rashad White. It's not the most efficient guy. Again, why I think a guy like Dave Canales probably needs another year on the job before like let's hand him keys to the kingdom type situation. I think he could be a good head coach someday. And obviously he's gotten great stuff out of Baker and Geno Smith the back-to-back years. But I think if I'm the Bucs, I'm going pass heavy. I'm uncorking some heaters to my big receivers in this one.
Bucs were doing that with Brady even last year. So I'll say this about Baker. He did throw multiple touchdowns in his previous four games before last week. And the Panthers, they're the toughest opponent for fantasy QBs. They allowed the fewest points. They're actually a really tough opponent. So maybe it was partially that, as much as it is injury, and he gets conversely the opposite matchup this week. The Eagles are awesome, favorable matchup for him. So I agree with you there. If you pepper Evans and Godwin with targets, things could really open up there for the Tampa Bay offense. Wild that Chris Godwin, was it his wife who complained on Twitter about his
Instagram? I think it was Instagram.
And then ever since then, his usage was just skyrocketed, like 8% target rate increase or something. Yes. And he was among the leaders in 10 in targets inside the 10 this year, and really ran cold on touchdowns. Something to remember next year. But Monday night game. I don't mind another standalone, and the winner of this one could get my Niners. So I'll be glued to this one.
All right. So who are you picking in this one?
I'll take the home dog. I'll take 3 points to Tampa Bay. This Eagles team, I mean, have to win by four on the road with the way they're looking. Give me the Bucs.
I am with you. Give me the Bucs in that one too. All right, let's close this out with a couple of DFS recommendations, parlays, props. Dalton, hit me with anything you've got. I've got a few on my side as well.
Yeah, I didn't realize we were going to talk the games like we did. I was definitely going to say Chiefs and Rams are the guys I like against the spread this week. So we'll do some DFS. A couple of DFS darts. DeMarcus Robinson, $17 against in this matchup we keep talking about. He posted a top 20 fantasy wide receiver week in four of his final five games. He led the Rams in red zone targets and end zone targets over the final five games of that span. We said the Rams have the best offense in football when healthy, and he's just locked in on number three in a condensed target tree. So he's undervalued in DFS. And then a real bargain is Tucker Kraft, $10. So he's the DFS minimum, maybe because Luke Musgrave returned last week. But Kraft saw 90% of the snaps regardless, led Green Bay in routes run. This is a matchup that could force Green Bay to be playing from behind, playing indoors, throwing. So I like Kraft at the DFS minimum in Yahoo.
Love it. I'll throw out four props here. Give me a Mike Evans over 67.5 yards parlayed with Chris Godwin over 4.5 catches. I think those dudes are going to shred. I mean, the Godwin over 4.5 catches is like -160. So just you're leaving a lot on the table there. But put them together. I think both these guys are going to smash in this game. The usage has been there for Chris Godwin, as you mentioned, in the post wife complaint on Instagram situation. But Mike Evans, how is he not, again, big playoff game, all that stuff. You know, Mike Evans balled out this year. I feel like he's having a big game. Jaden Reed, over 49.5 receiving yards against the Dallas Cowboys. He's their best man coverage beater. And this defense plays a ton of man coverage, and he's just a dude. He's a baller. Wicks is a little banged up again. We don't know Christian Watson's status in this one, so I feel like Jaden Reed is going to be a big part of the offense once again. I mentioned Diggs earlier. I'll take the over on 61.5 yards for Stephon Diggs. The motion, I think, is critical, getting him away from Joey Porter Jr. And, like, Joey Porter's really good, but the rest of this defense really struggles. And, I mean, we even saw it with T. Higgins, right? They got him away from Joey Porter one play, and he ripped off an 80-yard touchdown. And Diggs looked so good tearing up Jalen Ramsey, even when Josh Allen missed him on that one play. There's been a lot of near misses with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs lately. If we can just get it down this week, boys, we can get this in a couple of plays here. So I like that. And lastly, I will take the over on 7.5 catches for Amon-Ra St. Brown. No Sam Laporta, the zone heavy stats that we mentioned earlier in the show. He's one of the premier zone beating receivers in the NFL, like in reception perception. That's the strength of his game. He can win against man coverage and isolation attempts, stuff like that. But yeah, I feel really good about Amon-Ra being kind of the engine of the offense for Detroit this weekend.
All right. Yeah. Diggs may see some extra targets with that alpha Gabe Davis banged up this weekend.
Oh,
so I'm feeling you there. And then your Tampa Bay receivers, just I might add, the Eagles opponents averaged an NFL high 38.4 pass attempts against them this season. So hopefully the volume is there. Let's do a Super Bowl prediction. Harmon, I got 24-23. My Niners over the Ravens in a rematch. Is it wishful thinking? Maybe. It could be a Harbaugh year too, man. Jim and John both winning. You see that coming. But we need some revenge from last year's Super Bowl, from Christmas Day costing me my MVP ticket. We need some revenge there. But it's easy. These teams with the byes makes it easier. So I'll go simple. One seed versus one seed. Niners over Ravens, 24-23.
I think it is.
I know, boring, Colin says. I know.
It is boring, but I'm also Niners Ravens. I think we'll represent these two teams in the Super Bowl. And the great part is, Dalton, we can hold this prediction until next week when we preview the divisional round, because they're not going to be a part of this. So we get to be right, or not. We get to not be wrong for a whole other week before we pod again.
Right. Yeah. Oh man, I got an email of how the prices for a hotel stay in Vegas for the Super Bowl, 2-night minimum. It's gonna be not cheap, Harmon. Not cheap if the Niners do make it there. Let me tell you, that would be not a cheap trip to Vegas. Apparently, people are excited to watch some football there for the Super Bowl this year.
Well, I'll be there, so I mean, you can.
Can I bum? Yeah, I mean, find a place to sleep on your on any available area.
I mean, we'll talk offline. Talk offline.
Okay, I didn't even realize this was an option. Yeah, all right, nice. Yeah, the hotels are hilariously outrageous. I mean, $5,000 for 2-night at minimum.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, man. So you know, we'll talk offline about this. That's for sure. All right, that's gonna do it. What a show! I mean, bro, all the coaching news and then just an incredible slate of games. Hell of a show, Dalton. Always good talking ball with you, buddy.
Good times, Harmon. Thanks, man.
All right, everybody out there, enjoy Wildcard Weekend. This is going to be, it is going to be a treat. I think we're in for a great weekend of football. With a jam-packed Wildcard Weekend, we figured, let's go ahead and double dip with the pod on Monday. Scott Pienowski joins me bright and early on Monday morning to break down all of the weekend's action. That pod's going to drop, let's call it sometime around lunchtime on Monday. Then we are going to have a bonus pod that will recap Monday Night Football, featuring the Eagles and Bucks, and do a quick look ahead to the divisional round. Until then, we're out.